Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. On today's episode, we have a few things to talk about. I want to give the results of our TotalCon 2012 contest. I have a brief statement to make about the demise of Sopa and Pippa. We also have a review of Tropico 4 and a review of Napoleon Total War, the demo. I'm going to talk a little bit about G+ Hangouts, and I also want to talk about prepping for a con, what you need to do to be ready for TotalCon 2012. So, starting off today's episode, I want to thank all of you for tuning in, of course, and listening. I gotta say, I was a little surprised by a couple things with the previous show. Firstly, I was surprised by the lack of feedback concerning my review/editorial of the digital subscription to Battle Games Magazine. I actually thought I was going to get quite a bit of flack from people on that. I know a lot of you are fans of Battle Games Magazine. I'm a fan of, you know, its content and the magazine itself. As you heard in the review, I was not a fan and am not a fan of how the new owners are choosing to distribute it electronically. I had mentioned that you are licensing it, you don't own it, which is a major pet peeve of mine. So I did have some concerns about that, and I thought, you know, maybe some of you might also have some issues with my taking issue with that sort of stuff. I have to assume by your silence that either it's not important enough, or more likely you're just so busy you're not able to get around to taking the time to send some feedback on that issue. Plus, I mean, we've been running the TotalCon contest, and we had been getting submissions on that, so I do know that people were, you know, you were busy doing that sort of stuff and everything else that's going on. The other thing I have to say is that I was very excited, pleasantly so, by how many of you had listened to the previous episode, episode 67, which I had titled Bibliomania. There were 117 downloads of it in the past 30 days. That's one of the highest I've ever had for an episode so quickly. I have other episodes that, you know, they have a lot of downloads. A lot of people have listened to them. For example, episode 51 I did way back when I first started talking about the Black Powder rules, which I'm doing air quotes on the word rules. I hate to turn rules with that. But 234 people had downloaded and listened to, you know, episode 51 when I first started talking about Black Powder. And that's huge. That's the most popular episode I've ever done here on the show. And, I mean, all of you, it's what you like to hear about. But Bibliomania, 117, that's fastly growing. I'm sure that'll get into the top 10 in no time. And, I mean, it's already breaking records for getting so many downloads, so many listens, so fast. I don't know if it was just a subject matter, maybe you want to hear more about books, maybe you want more reviews, or I don't know, maybe there's something special about it. But for whatever reason, you liked it, and I'd like to know why you enjoyed episode 67 so much. So please send me your feedback to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com and tell me why you liked or what you didn't like about episode 67. Like I said, I gotta just take it by the numbers to mean that you do in fact like episode 67. In less than 30 days, it's over 110 downloads. So something about it was hitting the mark and makes me happy because I like to put out content that you want to listen to. So I got to take my cues from you and I try to deliver what you wish to hear. Now, those are just the two little things that I was pretty excited about. But let's get into one of the really cool things, the TotalCon contest. Now, I've talked about the TotalCon contest many, many times. And actually, in the last episode, I think I said TotalCon contest like 40 million times. But I'm delighted to say that the contest is over. It's ended. We have winners. Yes, winners indeed. I love giving stuff away. I love talking with all of you. I love hearing back from all of you. But I do love giving stuff away. So I want to announce who the winners are for the TotalCon contest. Now, I just want to remind you that the contest was a chance for you to get a free pass to TotalCon 2012. All you had to do was you had to tell me what your favorite American Civil War game was and why. So we had a lot of different submissions, and actually most of them were for board games, which I found intriguing. There were a couple for, you know, miniatures games, but nothing for anything else. Not much for computer games or, you know, card games. I guess I can really only think of one card game, so to speak, that does that sort of stuff. But I was just a little surprised by the how massive the number was in comparison that people had picked for a board game. But it was overwhelming, and I think it's just fitting that it's shown that way in the list of people who had won. So the person who won the grand prize, which was a free pass for the whole weekend at TotalCon 2012, is Roger Jarrett. Roger, congratulations. He won because he said his favorite game was House Divided. It's a board game. He said it has really interesting area movement, quick setup, quick play, and then you can have a choice. You can either play just 1 year of the war, or you can play the entire war. He felt it was a really good historical simulation. He got me excited about the game just by reading why he enjoys it. So he won the grand prize. He gets the free weekend pass at TotalCon 2012. And then you'll also remember there were three other winners. Three people picked at random to win a free day pass to TotalCon 2012. The first winner was Dan Quilty. Dan, congratulations. He won because he said Gettysburg, another board game, is one that he really enjoyed. Court N also won. He won as a result of saying that terrible Swift... I'm sorry, I'm reading this from my notes here. Terrible Swift Sword, The 3 Days of Gettysburg, is his favorite, and it's a board game. It's an older game, I guess. I think it might be out of print, but he said he's loved it all these years. There's tons and tons and tons of detail. The way he was talking about it kind of reminds me a little bit of the minutiae I've seen for things like Advanced Squad Leader. So not my kind of thing, but something that I'm sure many of you would enjoy. So Court won a pass, as did Adrian B. Adrian won for the same game, actually. Terrible Swift Sword, The 3 Days of Gettysburg. You can tell that these two are old grognards, that they love these old school type of games. And I gotta say, they're both people I play games with. I have a lot of fun playing different sort of stuff, and they're actually running with me the game at that's also on my mind for another reason, but at TotalCon, Daybreak at Hangman's Creek, using the Black Powder quote-unquote rules. It's going to be 15mm, American Civil War. It's going to be a lot of fun. And so these are the three winners, plus the grand prize winner, Roger Jarrett, Dan Quilty, Court N, Adrian B., all winners for the TotalCon 2012 contest. All of the winners, of course, have been contacted, and prizes are on their way, or will soon be on their way to the winners. I have to give a gigantic thank you to the people at Total Confusion LLC. That's a group that puts on TotalCon. In particular, I have to give a big thank you to Angela and Steve. They got the passes to me. They got all this going. They helped sponsor the contest, and they got all this happening. Plus, the kind folks at TotalCon had done a lot of promotion about the contest, so I'm really appreciative of that. I also want to give a big thank you to Ben Gerber over at trollitc.com. He allowed me to do posting up there about the contest, and I know that's where some of the submissions had come from as a result of that. I also want to give a big thank you to the Sages of RPG and all of our followers on Twitter who had talked about the contest, posted it, etc., and everyone on Facebook, everyone who entered and told their friends about it. And I'm just really appreciative that you took the time to enter this contest. I'm really happy that we were able to get you these prizes. I love giving free stuff. Free things are a great thing, especially one of the good free things. And TotalCon's a fantastic convention. I can't wait to go. It's this February. So, you know, matter of weeks, counting down the days to go into this. And I'm really excited about a couple of the events they had to go to, some of the panels. Of course, I'll be running the game with Court and Adrian, Daybreak at Hangman's Creek, American Civil War, 15mm, using the Black Powder quote-unquote rules on Saturday at 3 p.m. That's Saturday of the con at 3 p.m. It's a double block, so it's going to be up to 4 hours long, but it'll be a fun game. Might end sooner, who knows. It's up to you, the players. Hopefully enough of you have signed up so we can get a good game in. Looking forward to it. But like I said, TotalCon's a fantastic convention, and I'm really excited about going. Thank you again to everyone who, you know, gave prizes, who entered, just everyone. Thank you very much. Now, I said I wanted to do a little brief statement about Soper and Pippa, and my statement is, hooray! They're dead. Now, if you haven't heard, Soper and Pippa were two different pieces of legislation before the United States Congress. Now, I don't like to get into politics or religion or certain other things here on the blog and on the podcast. It's not the place for them. You want that sort of stuff, you go elsewhere. I'm here to talk to you about gaming, gaming-related things. And so you may have been wondering, Soper and Pippa, it's U.S. legislation and politics and so forth. Why are we talking about it on the gaming show? Well, because if they had passed, it's very likely, very possible, that both the podcast and the blog would not be here because of the draconian and tyrannical and dictatorial censorship that would have been put in place as a result of these legislations. So I am delighted to say that they have both been withheld. They're indefinitely postponed. I know that Senate Majority Leader Reid has indefinitely postponed. And I believe the act before the U.S. House of Representatives also indefinitely postponed. So the good news is that they're gone. Bad news is there's a big brother out there, pun intended, ACTA, ACTA. It's floating out in Europe right now. It's under debate, and from what I understand, and I'm still kind of a noob with understanding what ACTA is, what I understand, it is something that will impact not just a single country, not just a single continent. It will impact everyone, everywhere. If you take what you know about SOPA, take what you know about PIPA, add them together, and grow them to gigantic proportions, you get ACTA. Do a little research on the web, talk to your local officials, talk to your state reps, talk to your federal officials. If you're overseas, and I know some of you listeners are from the United Kingdom, you're from Europe, you're from elsewhere, try to read up about it and contact your elected officials and urge them to not allow ACTA to be passed into law. Something like this cannot happen as long as we want a free internet, free speech, as long as we want shows like the CWF Gamecast, Wargaming Recon, things like Meeples in Miniatures, This Week in Tech, Battle Games Magazine, and so forth. If you want any of these entities to continue, please urge your elected officials to say no to ACTA, because we can't have the internet to be censored. We all want the rights holders to be protected for things that they create, whether they're authors, whether they're musicians, they make movies, whatever it is you do, whether they're independent podcasters, independent musicians trying to make a mark. You want to protect all that, but none of these pieces of legislation are doing it the right way. So until it is done the right way, we have to stand up and say no. So that's my brief statement about all of that. Let's talk about Tropico 4. And you're thinking, Tropico 4? What the hey is that? Well, Tropico 4 is a video game. It's for Windows. And it puts you in control of your own Caribbean island nation, where you get to be the leader, El Presidente, as the game calls it. And you can be, good, you could be bad, you're a dictator, you could allow elections, you could not. And it's set in the Cold War, so you have to balance the needs of, the United States versus the Soviet Union, while also balancing the needs of the people who live on your island. You need to find housing for them, you need to provide food, you need to make money, so you need to export materials, export foodstuffs and other products. You might want to get an industry section going on. Maybe you want to make hand-rolled cigars, like, I don't know, certain famous communist island nation in the Caribbean. And maybe, you want to build up a military because you have an iron fist and those rebels keep on attacking your mausoleum. You got to do that. Maybe you want tourists. You have to balance all of these. Plus, and this is really cool, it has different factions of your population. So it breaks them down into groups like, nationalists. It breaks them down into those who are religious, intellectuals, communists and capitalists and so forth. So you have all these different factions, and if you allow elections, which you don't have to, but if you do, you need to appease these factions in order to stay in power, and if you get voted out, game's over, that's that. Now, the twist is, you're trying to do, hopefully, what is right for your people, but at the same time, you want to sock a little bit of money away into a private Swiss account, for when you retire, so, you move out of your El Presidente's mansion into, another mansion somewhere. Maybe you want to buy your own island somewhere else. So you need some money in your Swiss bank account. So there are ways for you to divert the funds that way. Maybe the United States is going to give you $100,000 to allow you to try to get reelected. Well, you could put all of that into your reelection campaign, but maybe things look like you're going to win by a landslide anyway. So maybe you're going to take half and put it in your bank account. Maybe you're going to take it all and put it in your bank account. Now, the game, it's a simulation. It's kind of like playing across of, like, SimCity, but with, like, a quirky kind of fun side to it. It's very much tongue-in-cheek. Yeah, you are El Presidente, and you get to customize who you are. You can base yourself off of real-world examples of dictators, like Juan Perón, Castro, so forth. You can create your own. Name your own person. Give him his own traits. Now, I mentioned that magic word, traits. In the game, you yourself, your avatar, as you're known in the game, has these different traits. They basically detail how you came to power, what your back history is, and different attributes about yourself. Are you, like, very hardworking, or maybe you're really smart, maybe you just bought your way into all of this. And all of that has positives and negatives for the game. Some things might make people dislike you more. Some might make you have stronger influence with a certain faction, like a military faction, for example. If maybe you're like a general and you rose up and took power by a coup. So all of that kind of comes into play with that. Now you start off the game and you have your little playthings who are living on the island, and you have your little mansion and everything. But they're going to starve and they're going to die off unless you do something quick. So you need to get food for them. And you can do that a few ways. You can build farms. And farms are really cool because farms can produce different types of foodstuffs. Some are mostly for you people to eat. Things like corn, for example. Other things are more for you to export. Like coffee or tobacco or pineapple. Bananas actually. Things to export, but you people can also use that themselves on the island. You can have these fishermen who can go out and get fish. Maybe you need to export the fish, because perhaps later on in the game you built a cannery. So then you would then can your fish and export it to the United States or to the Soviet Union. Or maybe the fish is just there for your people to eat. So once you take care of your bases like that, you then expand and you can build things like churches, and you can build... I mentioned a mausoleum, which if you get tourists, it allows you to have the tourists come in. Actually, your own tropicans, as they call it, the residents of your island, come and they pay a fee to go to your mausoleum. There's all sorts of stuff. You can do a wide variety of things. You can even get a nuclear power plant. You can get nuclear weapons to protect yourself. Now you're thinking, so you mentioned these factions and you're doing this sort of stuff. What happens if you do things the wrong way? Well, there's really no wrong way to the game. There are certain scenarios to play. There's a campaign, or you can do a sandbox. You can do any or all of these, however you so choose. And like I said, there's no wrong way. But let's say you make a foreign power angry. And I mentioned the United States and the Soviet Union are the big two for you. But you also have Europe, and you have the Middle East, and you have China to contend with. Now, if you make, say, the United States very angry at you, they might embargo your goods. And you're thinking, oh, who cares? I don't need the United States. I got my friends in Europe and the Middle East clamoring for all my goods. Well, that might be true. But the United States most likely is closer to you and therefore is more likely to more quickly get your goods. As a result of their proximity and everything, they might also be wanting more of your material. So if they're shut off, you're losing a valuable pipeline of money. Now, money is very important because you need it to build all sorts of things, and you also need it to put into your Swiss bank account. So let's pretend you got embargoed and you don't want to deal with it. You're like, whatever, that's fine. Well, then they're going to blockade you, and that's a problem, because if things continue down that slope, you will get invaded. If you get invaded, game over. You don't want to do that. Now, I had mentioned building things, and this is another cool mechanic. You can build stuff, and then you can pay extra money to have things built instantly. Or you have construction offices that you start off the game with one, but you can build more. And your tropicans get work at the construction offices, and then there they go out and they build your houses, they build your tenements, they build your farms, your mansions, your whatever. They have to go and build them. Now they can go, however, you can build roads to those areas, and when you construct the roads, which happens automatically, they drive out and everything, and they can go and then they build whatever. But you can also set priorities on the construction. So maybe you really need this church constructed right away because you're going to get extra money, but you don't really need that other apartment building just yet because the other ones aren't full yet. So you put the church up to the highest priority and the apartment building stays where it is in the medium, and the workers go out, they build the church first, it's done, woo, and then they go and they'll tackle the other one. So you have this whole kind of order of operations thing, which is really cool. Now, the game has a tutorial, which is really good because it's very accessible. It walks you through step-by-step how to play the game. It's very easy to get into the game, very easy to play, and it's a lot of fun. I've been playing this for ages. I've actually played an older one called Tropico 2, which is a lot of fun. But Tropico 4 is a little better for a couple of reasons. One, it has better graphics. It has 3D graphics. When I say 3D, I don't mean like you need 3D glasses for them. I mean like things are rendered 3D in that you're not looking like a top-down view in a 2D kind of world. Like you can zoom in, you can zoom out, move the view around, the camera around, and you can actually get up close. You can see the people on the streets. And of course, you can adjust the levels of graphic detail in your options. Maybe your machine can't handle like that high level, so you just bump it down a level or two, and you can everything still looks really nicely. It works really well on my iMac when I boot into XP, so that's really cool. But then there's a couple expansions for this that you can get. One is a military-based one. It gives you some extra, one extra building, and then some decorations, so you can get things like guard towers or barricades or whatever. And then there's another one that allows you to build like plantations and that sort of stuff. And each of them has their own special avatar that gives you, your representation in the game, a chance to appear different and have different characteristics and different uniform and all that sort of stuff. So that's kind of cool. Now, Tropico 4 and its add-ons can all be purchased on Steam. And Steam is a great way, in my opinion, to get games because you get your Steam account, which is free. You go on, you look for what you want. There might be free things like demos or whatever, or things you buy. You pay for them electronically, whether it's like with a debit credit card, PayPal, or whatever. And then the content is downloaded onto your machine. Of course, if you're on like a dial-up or you're in an area that has slow internet speeds, something like this isn't going to work for you. But most of us around here, anyway, tend to have high speed. So this you shouldn't have a problem with things. The speed should be good to get the games and download. At most, a game can take a few hours, depending on your speed. I've found that they're usually a lot quicker. I got Tropico 4 this way. I believe it was about $40. And then it was an extra $10, I believe, for the military expansion. And I figured $50 was enough for me to spend on this. Yeah, you can buy Tropico 4 for less if you go to like a video game store, like a GameStop or something like that, or like a Walmart or whatever might have it, or you know, wherever you happen to go buy video games, you might happen to see it and be able to buy it for $20, which I think is probably a fairer price now for it, whereas it's been out for a while. And I actually think it should probably be bundled, the main game, with both expansions. But I wanted to play it right away. I was hankering for a game, and you know, you can buy stuff online from Steam when everywhere else is closed. So you can go on Steam and be like, oh, I see they have this game here. Let me get that or this or that or whatever. Download. And you can be doing it 2 in the morning. You could be doing it 2 in the afternoon, whatever. And it'll just keep on working as long as the computer's going. It'll download. And then you just start up the game and play it. Now, Tropico 4 also is pretty cool because it has some cheat codes. And I played around with the cheat codes probably because I like to cheat in games just to see all the different possibilities that one can do. But also because I wanted to experience everything when I played the game to review it. So there's a bunch of different cheat codes and you can look around online for them. There are things like they give you extra money or they boost your reputation or lower it with, you know, like the United States or Russia. They boost your tourism or happiness or like all sorts of different things like that. In addition to the game having a tutorial, there's also a free downloadable demo for the game. And you can definitely get that from Steam for free, which I had played. If you play the demo, and I actually recommend you do before you buy the game, just to see what you think about it. I want you to note that there are certain build-ins and functionality that they have disabled in the demo. Basically because they want you to try the game, but like if you want like all of it, they really want you to buy it. And I mean, that is only fair. So you can't really build anything that requires electricity. In the game, you can build power plants, like a power plant or a nuclear power plant. You can build, you know, wind turbines, if that's something, a road that you'd like to go. But you can't build any of those in the demo. And, I mean, it's fine. Some of the stuff in the demo, if you continue to play it after a while, if you do, like, a sandbox kind of level, you might be like, well, I want to build a power plant so I can build, you know, this or that or all sorts of other stuff. And it you can't. But by that point, you should have an idea of whether or not you like the game. And if you do like it, I would suggest purchasing it. I had a lot of fun playing Tropico 4. I really enjoy using Steam for this sort of stuff. Some of my friends love Steam. They buy almost all their material on there. Tropico 4 is a really fun game if you like to pretend to be someone else. If you enjoy playing SimCity, if you play like Puerto Rico or San Juan, maybe this is a game that might be for you. A little different, but kind of the same flavor. And like I said, you can play it so that you're a good leader, you're a bad leader, somewhere in between. And, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's just tongue-in-cheek, kind of poke fun at things. But at the same time, you do kind of get a feel for stuff. I kind of felt like a little more in tune with the people who live in the third world and, you know, some of those Caribbean nations, whether they're on islands or not. And just how the mixture of, you know, people live here and they have this immense poverty and they're living in this gorgeous place, but then all these, like, tourists come in and, like, the needs for them and the balance between all these different groups, the residents, the government, the tourism, and the foreign powers and everything. So it's kind of a cool way to, like, if you're into, like, being, like, the leader of your own nation or whatever, it could also fit into that. So I do have to say Tropico 4 is worth the time, it's worth the money. And I give it 2 thumbs up. I suggest you give it a try. And we will have a link in our show notes, as long as I remember, which I should, to the website for Tropico 4. To the Tropico 4 website. I believe you can download the demo from there. But like I said, I had downloaded it from Steam. So that is my review of Tropico 4. It's definitely worth the time and the money. Now we have another video game to talk about, and this time it's actually just a demo I'm going to be reviewing because I didn't pay the money to buy the whole game, which I might. Now this game is Napoleon Total War, and you're thinking, cool, Napoleonics, yes! And I agree. But what actually drew me to it is the Total War part. It's part of the Total War franchise, and I really enjoyed the whole Total War system. I've been playing, you know, Total War Rome, Shogun Total War, Medieval Total War, Medieval 2 Total War. I've been going to be getting Shogun 2 Total War with, you know, its expansions. I played Total War Empire, which kind of has some of the Napoleonics, but it covers, you know, like the American Revolution and Seven Years' War and so forth. Now, Napoleon Total War specifically focuses on Napoleonic fighting, the Napoleonic Wars. And the demo basically allows you to play one battle. Now, before I get into that, let me back up a little bit. For those of you not familiar, Total War is a strategy war game. You choose a nation, nation would be the right way to put it, to be in charge of. You build and construct armies, but then you also have civic duties where you have to build, you know, civic buildings. Maybe you're building a town hall, for example, or, you know, a shipyard or whatever. And you build in these, and then you want to go and conquer other territories, you form alliances with neighbors. Empire Total War allows you to build really cool ships and do sea fighting. You can choose to have your battles, you know, just taken care of automatically by the computer, or you can play them real-time, so it becomes a real-time combat game where you get taken to the field of battle, you organize your forces, you know, how you want to, and take the objective, which is to cause your opponent to flee, basically. Now, some of the older ones had allowed you, like, you might be attacking a Roman city, or maybe you're Rome attacking, like, a Carthaginian city. Or perhaps in the Shogun one, you know, you're in feudal Japan, you have an army of samurai and so forth, and you're doing everything. Or medieval, you could pretend you're, you know, King Richard the Lionhearted and on his way traversing wherever. Or maybe you're Saladin and you're repelling the horrible barbarian smelly Europeans who don't know how to bathe and don't know anything about science and technology. Or you're playing Napoleonic Total War and you might want to be Napoleon and you might want to conquer all of Europe. You can do all of that. Now, in the Napoleon Total War, as I said, it lets you play one of these live-action battles. And I'm sure I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, even though I swear I practiced and I tried. The Battle of Ligny, L-I-G-N-Y, is the one battle you actually get to play in the game. You command the forces of Napoleon, and as you can guess, you want to go and defeat the Prussians under Field Marshal Blücher and part of the Waterloo campaign. So you are in Belgium, and you're going, and you want to go and kick his butt, basically, and take the town and win the battle. Some of the cool things with this is that you have cavalry, and they behave like Napoleonic cavalry should, as far as I understand. But you can also go into buildings, which is cool. So you can have your forces move into a building, and the buildings that you can enter are identified with, you know, a little icon above them that's floating. So you can choose them to go into there, so they get better protection when they're fighting. So you might not suffer as many losses when you're in a firefight in a city. Downside, buildings are destructible. Cannons can destroy them. You have infantry shooting at them. Pieces of them will break off, so you can see big gaping holes in the building. And of course, as a building is more damaged and there's more holes in it, your troops will take more damage, and so you will eventually want to take them out and keep on progressing forward. The controls for the game are just like the controls for every other Total War game that I've played. They're very intuitive and easy to use. Combination of mouse and keyboard. You point and click. You can highlight and select a unit and give it an order. You can right-click and tell it to go somewhere. If you, you know, right-click on an enemy unit, they'll go and attack them, whether it's charge or move and fire or whatever. You can redress the lines, which is really cool, so you can have your regiment be as big or as small as you need. But there are a couple other cool things about the Napoleon Total War. So there were a few different versions originally released, but the Steam version is separate, and some of the ones that you could have got in the retail stores had, you know, special stuff with them, such as maybe special packaging, or they might have had a special unit in them that you could use, but the Steam version doesn't have some of that other stuff, but it does let you get it very quickly, so that's cool. One of the other things that it does do, which I think is really neat, is it has a uniform editor. So you can change how the uniforms look. Maybe you think that you should have different facing on your units, that you want a certain regiment to have red facings or purple or whatever, polka dots. You know, whatever it is you want, you can do sort of that kind of stuff and alter how the uniforms look. Maybe you want to have them represent a certain imagination that maybe you've been working on for a while. And so that way you can pretend like it's your imagination going to war or whatever. You can do all that sort of stuff. The game, the full game, has, you know, a story mode campaign. It's a full whatever. You can kind of just do whatever. You can do one-off battles, which would be the real-time battles. It has all sorts of that. The AI is decent, not great. But, I mean, if you just want to play a game for a while and have some fun, it's kind of the game for you. If you're looking for like a serious, in-depth, you know, tactical strategy sort of game, then maybe not for you, but you're probably not going to be looking at the Total War series anyway. Total War's kind of intended more for the casual gamer slash war gamer slash video, you know, computer gamer who might have an interest in Napoleonics or this era of warfare. And I enjoyed it. Like I said, I did not buy the full game just because at the time I bought Tropical 4 and I didn't want to be spending tons of money on video games, but I bought it on Steam. It was quick download, a lot of fun to play. It's put out by Sega, who's put out the other Total War games. And, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's worth getting. I would recommend that you give it a try. Definitely get the demo of it first and see what you think. And then if you do like it, then give the whole game a try. Chances are, if you've played any other of the Total War games, that you will then have an idea of how this plays, since they're all basically the same setup, so it's familiar for you. And like I said, it's a lot of fun. Yes, it does have a multiplayer mode, so you can definitely do that. And, you know, it's worth the time, it's worth the money, it's worth the effort. So I do have to say, give it a try, and I'd be interested in what you think about it. So that's my thoughts on Napoleon Total War, my review of the demo. And I gotta say, I'm happy to say that both reviews were positive for me, you know, today. I enjoyed being able to say that. Now, let's talk about prepping for a con. But actually, before we get into that, because, I mean, it's kind of related. Not completely, but it is kind of related. I want to talk a little bit about Troll ITC. As you may recall, I've mentioned Troll ITC before. I mentioned it earlier in this episode, actually. But I've mentioned it before because I am going on, and I write a column there, is what it is. Every week, you'll be able to see a new column from me about some sort of gaming. I am the lone voice talking about historical gaming, war gaming, New England gaming, miniatures gaming, that sort of stuff. and most of the other content on there is kind of like role-playing games oriented, whether it's D&D or Pathfinder or whatever. But I'm the guy talking about, you know, miniatures gaming and wargaming, that sort of stuff. And I wrote a column recently titled Wargaming Blends Old and New School Gaming, a.k.a. A Response to Ben Gerber's Thinking in the Old School. And I just want to mention this because Ben wrote this article, a really good one actually, about how there's basically these two different schools of gaming philosophy, old and new. Old school would be, an example would be, you're playing a game and you might not have all the rules and stat lines out for everything, but you allow the group of players to come to a consensus on rules, decisions that makes the most sense for the game and that allows the most fun. New school would be playing something like Warhammer 40K, where everything's very specific. You have army lists in there, and you're building your armies with point costs and all that sort of stuff. And so you have these polar opposites, really, schools of thought for gaming. And I know I oversimplified, you know, old school and new school, but I'm just trying to get to the meat of things. And Ben was talking about, you know, how there's these different philosophies out there, and there's a good pamphlet to read online. It's a digital download, a free digital download, actually. And he was just kind of saying that he's basically more of an old-school player, and he gave some reasons why. He was talking about role-playing games, actually, that there was an old D&D campaign, I believe, that he had done, and one of his players had spent all this time and in-game resources and that sort of stuff to build an indestructible sword, I think it was, and they were going against an Egyptian god, and he went to use the sword, and the thing that was indestructible was destroyed. And how, you know, in the rules of the game, if it was a new-school attitude, would be, it's indestructible in-game, therefore you cannot destroy it. But the fact that Ben destroyed it, he did it because he felt, as GM, that destroying it would be better for the game, and that the players would actually have more fun, because they would then have to work harder to do all sorts of stuff to then kill or confront the Egyptian god in battle, instead of just be like, oh, one swipe and my blue indestructible sword killed the Egyptian god, ha ha ha. Now, it's interesting because he mentions the fact that he had destroyed the sword all these years later. I think he said something like 15, 20 years later. They're still talking about this. And they're not talking about it in a negative way. The players and him, they're reminiscing about it. They're saying, remember that time so-and-so had that blue indestructible sword and it was destroyed when he went to kill the Egyptian god? How awesome was that? And so they're having fun about that still after all this time. So he's kind of advocating for this old-school philosophy. But at the same time, he realizes that that might not fit for everyone. And so he's talking about how the new school philosophy works for many different people. Now, his article was very much couched in role-playing games. And I thought, you know, I read it, and I was like, well, how does this relate to, you know, miniatures wargaming? So, like, I read it, and my first thought was, wait, who wants to play a game where the rules can just change at any time without notice? And then the more I thought about it, the more I realized that I myself am kind of a mixture or a bridge, maybe, between old and new school gaming. I have this whole background of GW gaming, which for me is very new school. It's very, you know, these are the rules and you must follow them. And I mean, I've experienced my fair share of rules lawyers and power gamers, who I think fit strongly into this whole new school gaming sort of thing. But at the same time, I enjoy, like, to me, the best kind of game would be just getting together and having fun with the people I'm playing with and not really caring about what happens in-game so much. That, like, if the rules are going to be adapted a little bit, as long as we know about it beforehand, and that we know these are going to be kind of how things are handled, let's just do it to have fun. So, in that way, I'm kind of in the old school. Like, I don't... Things can be a little rules light. Like, every single situation does not need to be explained and detailed and, you know, 10 pages of annotation saying, in this situation, such and such. But if this, go to section 14-B, subsection 22. I mean, I don't need all of that. So coming at it like that, I realized that wargaming kind of is the same way. There are, you know, of course, rules that are more new school and rules that are more old school. But I feel that there's quite a few of them that are in the middle of the road. They kind of blend the both to take some of the old and some of the new and put it together so that you have the stability of, you know, having detailed rules. But at the same time, you have the openness to allow you, the player, and the people you're playing with to be creative, to adapt and alter the rules and to make changes as necessary. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that the Black Powder, quote-unquote, rules are the perfect blending of old and new school. Now, I'm sure some of you are going to say, what are you talking about? Black Powder is completely old school. They keep on talking about just having fun and having a glass of port or whiskey and whatever. And, I mean, they do, but for me, that's the old school coming into it. They have very clear rules and very detailed clear rules on how to play the game and how to have it set up and how things are supposed to be handled, which is the new school. And, of course, I mean, they do say change anything you'd like in here to fit your needs, which, again, is old school. But it has this whole back and forth, this blending of them. So the more I had thought about Ben's article, the more I was thinking about Black Powder. And I thought, you know, I should write about this and I should talk about what's happening here. So I mentioned, you know, Black Powder in depth. And I mentioned that, you know, it's rules, but I can't call them rules. Like, I feel like if the designers could come right on and say, do you know what? It's just a book. They would. I mean, in the book, they kind of do. But, like, I call it, you know, guidelines for gentlemanly wargaming. You just want to get together with some of your friends, kick back, have some fun, move some models across the table, and call it a night. Or call it a weekend. I mean, whatever the case happens to be. So I talk about all this in there. And I talk about how I feel that people who are tournament gamers in particular are very much new school type of players. That they crave that strict adherence to rules with clearly defined wording and a clearly defined and accepted interpretation, because that allows them to, you know, you're building whatever your army list is, your rosters, and you're forced to play in the tournament, so that way you can maximize whatever chance you might have to win. You have your own capabilities as a gamer, as, you know, a leader of miniature models, as of toy soldiers, but then you got to take whatever the game gave you. So if you're better off taking, you know, weapon A over weapon B, even if weapon B makes more sense and fits the storyline better, you got to take weapon A, I feel, if you are, like, a true tournament gamer, because that's going to give you the better chance to win. So I felt like people like that are going to kind of go more for a new school sort of game. And I mentioned in the column a bunch of different types of new school sort of games, and I actually kind of related to World of Warcraft, because if any of you have played World of Warcraft, and you might not have, but if you have, there's a lot of debate and a lot of discussion on quote-unquote talent builds. Your characters earn certain points called talent points, which you can put them into different things, and talents are like special abilities. They modify your character, and people debate, like, how many points should you put into such and such? And over here, and should you take this ability and that? And what kind of character should it be? If you're a mage, for example, which I am in the game, should you be an arcane mage? Or should you be a frost mage, a fire mage, a combination? What's going to give you the best chance to do the most amount of damage? And in the game, they call that DPS, damage per second. How much damage can you do per second? And how can you tweak out maybe that extra 5 or 10 damage per second? Is that going to make it better? Or is there certain gear, trinkets that you should use, and all that. So World of Warcraft, in this regard, very new school. And this kind of brings it back to the role-playing games, because D&D 4th Ed, for example, has been kind of called like World of Warcraft on paper, basically. And for me, I don't mind that. I like that. But if you're looking more for the storyline, you don't really care what combination of mage you should be, or if this gear is going to give you to make more damage each time you roll a d20. You care more about what's the background behind your characters and what's the motivation for doing that and the creativity that you can do with all that. Not the, hey, look at this uber character sheet I made because I just eked out an extra 10 points of life and I can do 62 points of damage with this ability right here. I mean, you're not going to care about that. That's very new school. Now, looking at all this sort of stuff, I kind of have been able to realize that you can look at things like websites, for example, or message boards and everything to get an idea for where the people are coming from. If you are an old-school gamer, don't be going to Librarium Online and wanting to talk about 40K, because you're going to see lots of lists there. Oh, what gear should I take here? And, oh, I got a game to play tomorrow, so what's the best build I should use for my Tau? Yeah, you're not going to care about that. You're going to want to know more like, so Tau have philosophy of people have their own different sects, and, you know, whether you're, like, a religious Tau or fighter Tau, and, like, what's your motivation? And would you work with crew or not? Would you go and use armor and vehicles, or like, what would you do? Is close combat something you should get involved with, or should you just stand back and shoot? And so you would build your list around that, the story, the fluff, more so than, well, if I do such and such, I'm going to have a better chance of doing more damage and winning the game. For you, winning takes second place to the experience, having fun, the being with your friends, and all that sort of stuff. So it just helps you kind of shape your worldview. For me, it helps me to say, do I want to go to this website? Do I want to stay here? Do I want to stay there? Whatever. So my whole column kind of deals with all of that. And, I mean, you might not agree with anything that I've said right now or anything in the column, but I thought you might want to take a peek at it, which you can find it over at trollitc.com. I'll have a link in our show notes to it. Like I said, it's called Wargaming Blends, Old and New School Gaming, a.k.a. a response to Ben Gerber's Thinking in the Old School. But I mentioned this in relating to prepping for a con, because if you go into a con, any con, whether it's Total Con or Huzzah or, you know, whatever, you want to kind of get an idea of what games you might want to play in. If you're a new school gamer, you don't want to be playing an old school kind of game, because you're not going to have fun, and it's not going to be worth your time, and you're going to be miserable, and the other people aren't going to have fun. So you want to play in the type of games that you're going to have fun playing in. Now, Total Con has tons of different types of games that you can play. Of course, lots of them are board games and role-playing games. So if you're like a miniatures gamer, you're not going to want to be signing up for a role-playing game or a board game. You're going to want to sign up for a miniatures game, and that's perfectly fine. Like, vice versa, if you love playing role-playing games, don't sign up for a miniatures game. I mean, this is common sense, but like, if you go looking at the lists, for example, if you enjoy a mixture of new and old school, and you happen to see there's a miniatures game, Daybreak at Hangman's Creek, then you might be able to figure out, oh, they mentioned Black Powder. I know Black Powder is a combination of old and new school. I like combination old and new school, so I might want to play that. And you can just kind of figure all that out. So you need to plan what type of games you want to play accordingly. And it's something like Total Con is great because it's vast of games allows you to pick and choose the different types that you want to play. Now, when I was looking at the listing for Total Con, I was thinking, oh, I'm really excited. I need to pick what games I want to do so I can register. Let me see what it is. And I looked and I saw some games on one of the days that I was really excited about. Some War at Sea games that are being played. And I was like, I love War at Sea. I haven't played in ages. I should sign up for that. And I was looking and I've been trying to figure out the timing and everything. Last year when I went to Total Con, I was kind of lost. It was my first time going to a con, first time going to one of these things alone, too. So I didn't know what to bring, what to wear, what I needed, nothing. I mean, for whatever reason, there's like no information like that out there on the net that I could find. Maybe it's common sense. Maybe I should have just known this is what you do. But I didn't. And so I wish I had some guidance. Now, when I go to Total Con this time, it's going to be a little weird because originally I had planned to stay over, which I'm not doing now. But it's weird because I'm going to two different days, and one of the days I'm going because I'm running an event. So I need to I have two different hats I have to wear. I have to wear a hat of running game and hat of playing in game. So one of the days, of course, I'm going to be playing in some games, going to some panels, which means I'll be, you know, wearing my t-shirt, some sort of geeky t-shirt. I'll be, you know, wearing comfortable shoes and jeans, and I make sure I have plenty of gas because it's going to take me like half hour, 45 minutes minimum to get to the con. I'll have a backpack because I'm going to bring some podcasting gear with me, bring an iPad. So, I mean, I can have fun while I'm playing the games, and I'm going to have this other stuff. So I can also record if I want to, you know, people who are there, interview them for the podcast. I can take notes on things. And, you know, try to get online. They have free Wi-Fi there, so I can get online and post stuff online, maybe, and that sort of stuff, so that I can then come back here to the show, Wargaming Greek Con, and talk to you about what happened at the con. Of course, one of the really important things is you need to bring an open mind. You need to be willing to play games and, you know, be a good gamer, that sort of stuff. But also, I'm going to be bringing some snacks to eat before I arrive. I'm trying to watch what I eat, trying to eat healthy, so I'll be bringing stuff like that with me, you know, water, for example, stay hydrated, and, you know, snacks to put in my backpack to have on the way down, so that way I'm not, like, starving when I'm down there. The first day, I will be there almost a whole day, so I'll have to have meals and stuff, so, you know, money and everything. Now, the second day when I'm there, I'm running the game. Thankfully, I don't have most of the stuff needed to run the game. The other guys have most of it. So what I have to bring is, I have to bring things like, you know, dice, I have to bring rule sheets, not like rule sheets, but like quick reference guides, kind of just like, at a glance, this is how you play the game. And, you know, different odds and ends like that, so that when people are playing the game, that I can say, here's what I have, and, you know, this is what you need, and be able to help all of them. I'm probably going to spend quite a bit of time rereading the Black Powder rules. It's been a while since I played, just to kind of brush up on them, and make sure I'm up to date again with them, and that I'm comfortable enough with them. And the other two guys will be doing the same thing. I'll be bringing a camera, aka my iPhone, so I can take some pictures and all that sort of stuff. But, like, you just kind of have to think about all this sort of things. And, you know, communicating with people beforehand would be another thing, to see who I might be seeing. I can tell you, on Saturday, I will be wearing my Wargaming Recon t-shirt, so you'll be able to see me in that. It's blue, has a Wargaming Recon icon on it, so I will be there wearing that. It'll be easy to find, I promise. So those are just some of my thoughts on what I'm going to do to get ready for the con. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'm actually looking forward to seeing all of you there, or those of you who will be attending. And yeah, it should be good. So now I just briefly, I want to talk about G+, which is a Google Plus. And Google Plus, which is basically Google's version of Facebook, but kind of different, you can have what they call a Hangout. And a Hangout basically is kind of like a video conference where you can video chat with multiple other people at the same time. Or you can choose to have, like, your camera turned off or your mic turned off, so you can just chat in, like, a chat window, like, text-based chat instead. And I attended one a few weeks ago that Sages of the RPG ran, and they had been doing it for a few times. They do it on Wednesdays, and it was actually kind of cool because, you know, you ever have a chance where you're, like, online and you're talking with a friend and you're talking about some game and you just get into this big discussion and you're typing furiously, and, I mean, after a while, it takes a long time to type stuff. So instead, you could have this Google Plus Hangout to talk about stuff. Talk about games, do prep for maybe running an event at a con, or whatever. Or you could also play a game this way. Now, Sages of the RPG tried playing a game, and we need to improve a little bit at it. But, like, some games are obviously better at it than others. I've heard of people doing things, like, on Skype, like having bridal showers, for example, baby showers on Skype, so you could do, like, any number of different things using the Google Plus Hangout. It'd just be kind of a cool way maybe for remote gamers to get together. You've heard of play-by-email kind of games, play-by-mail games. Maybe instead, you and some of your friends who don't live near each other get together at a certain day and time. You have a Google Plus Hangout, and maybe you're playing chess. Maybe you're playing Pandemic that way, or, you know, whatever. You guys have your own board games. Maybe you're playing a game of Black Powder, or Saga, or whatever, DBN, whatever. And you have your thing there, and you have the camera showing what you're doing on there, and you guys are replicating it. You're doing play-by-mail games, so to speak, but you're doing play-by-Google Plus Hangout. So it could be a really cool way to try some of these things out. I haven't done anything with it other than, you know, attending the G+ Hangout, but I just thought it was really cool, and I wanted to mention it to see if you guys have done anything like that and what you thought about it. Maybe in the future, I'll try to host a G+ Hangout for those of you who could attend. It could be a cool way to do an episode of the show, maybe. I'm not sure, you know, how, if the video gets saved, or if I would need a separate recorder or whatever. There's all stuff I can look into, but I just thought that was kind of neat. Anyway, that's all I get for the show. We're about an hour in, and I just want to thank all of you, as always, for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time to invite me into your lives, to listen to the show. So I hope you enjoyed what I had to say with the TotalCon results about SOPA, PIPA, and ACTA, my reviews of Napoleon, Total War, and Tropical 4, my brief and wandering thoughts about preparing for a con, plus my extensive talking about my Troll ITC article, and then my brief thoughts about G+. So we'll be back, of course, with another episode of Wargaming Recon. But as always, thank you for listening, and don't forget, keep on gaming, and next time you hear from me, we'll probably be after TotalCon, so I'll be talking about TotalCon. Be a lot of fun. Thanks again. Bye.
Ever wonder what makes a city tick? It is a phenomenon that some people don't see the 2.5-ton amphibious vehicle.
So do you, at your stand, let people pick their own fruit,
well,
those kind of things?
There are certain items that we would gladly, like cantaloupe and honey, do we let people pick. And if they don't like what's in the bag, they gladly give the bag back.
As we're speaking, there is a group locked in the Granary Cemetery on their Freedom Trail walking tours.
Explore Boston with me at bostonbehindthescenes.com.
In the town of Greenfield, there stands a sanctuary dedicated to the art of the game. Not physical games requiring brawn or coordination, but games of the mind. Cerebral challenges like Dungeons and Dragons and Warhammer. Dedicated to those brave, lonely men who gather at this shrine called Griffin Games. Chunky men with comic books. These are men who get strange looks. These are men with great big brains. These are the men of Griffin Games.
Like aliens from unseen worlds, no time for sports, no time for girls. They carry pens, their shirts are stained. They are the men of Griffin Games.
They use slide rules and sci-fi words, but they're not fools, they're more like nerds. Medieval knights with dragons slain, brave warriors from Griffin Games.
Each Thursday night, these gamesters meet. But what is this?
What is this?
An empty seat. One virtual soldier's fallen dead.
He's hit the floor.
But as he did, these words he said.
Put lots of pens in my son's shirt. Make him a nerd, an introvert. Put trivial knowledge in his brain. Make him a man of Griffin Games.
I salute you, Griffin Games.
Way to go, smart dudes.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew M. and Court N. for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.